Here's the beauty of blowing it, is that you get the opportunity to make it right again. That's what 1 John 1:9 is all about, is the cleansing of unrighteousness so that you can be placed back in a righteous state. And that's why I love a forgiving God. And so oftentimes, if you're going to be truly a man and woman that wants to be a follower after Jesus' own heart, it requires you to be able to say, I'm sorry.
Welcome to part two of this week's message in our series, Chasing Wisdom. Every week this summer at Three Creeks Church, we're chasing wisdom by looking at what God says about pursuing a life well lived. The second part of the chase is finding people who have followed God for a long time and gained wisdom. Let's hear what they have to say.
All right. Well, hey, welcome to Three Creeks Church, Chasing Wisdom. We're in week three, part two. I'm here with a friend. Man, I wish I knew you more and longer. His name's Marvin Daniels. In 2009, I trekked down to Branson, Missouri, and I attended this thing called the Kennecuck Institute. They brought in some of the world's best speakers and teachers on the Bible. Marvin Daniels, you were one of them, and I can't think of someone that whole year that had more of an impact on my life, even though you were there a real short time. And I've always looked up to you and have followed you from afar. I think the world of you. Marvin, tell us just a little bit about your family, and who are you, and where are you, and what are you doing?
Pastor Joel, thank you so much. It is a privilege to be here with you and with your congregation. I'm Marvin Daniels. I'm the executive director and CEO of the Hope Center in Kansas City, Missouri. The Hope Center is a community youth development organization whose vision and mission is to develop healthy communities where the vulnerable will have hope and flourish. And the way we do that is through our child development practices. We have after-school programs, character and training programs, leaders and training programs, as well as support groups for parents. And we have a charter school as well as a medical clinic. We're working on some affordable housing initiatives as well. So that is just part and parcel of what we're doing to make an impact on the east side of Kansas City and to see transformed lives that creates a sustainable community. But personally, Marvin Daniels is a husband of one wife, Andrew Daniels. We've been married for 30 years, and in that 30-year marriage, God granted us 5 children, 3 sons and 2 daughters. Malachi is 26, Isaiah is 24, Micah is 22, and he just got married last week. Imani is 21, and Nia is 18 years of age, who will be going off to college. So we're getting a chance to move into a new season in life, and that is a season as empty nesters, if you will.
Wow. So 5 children between 18 and 26. Yes. So 20 years ago, y'all were in the middle of it, man. Lots of diapers.
You know our love for youth ministry. Some people talk about it. We decided to implement it.
Oh, man. Well, I'm excited to talk about this topic specifically with you. It's cool how it relates to what we talked about, what you taught about at the Institute a decade ago. I'm sure you still teach on this all the time. But Proverbs 10:9 says this, "Whoever walks in integrity walks securely, but whoever takes crooked paths will be found out." And our big idea around this topic is that it's never wrong to do the right thing.
Amen.
Never wrong to do the right thing. So, Marvin, let me just start off by just asking you a simple question. What does integrity mean to you?
You know, if I was to look at a definition of integrity, I would look in two different ways. One is the example of Daniel, who was had integrity of heart or upright in the heart. You know, in other words, he was a man who was honest and he had a soundness in his heart. Yeah. For me, though, when I look at integrity, I look at integrity from my life's verse, which is 1 Timothy 4:16, which simply says, "Watch your life and doctrine closely. Doctrine as in your teaching. Before, in so doing that, you will save both yourself and your hearers. In layman's term, it is that my lifestyle must match my conversation or prophetic voice. So my talky-talky should match my walkie-walkie. That's what integrity does, is that what I do and what I say ought to match. Or in other words, my reputation, what people know me as, and my character, that is who I am in the dark, if they were walking on the same street, they should recognize each other if they passed.
Yeah. Man, that's good. I feel like as you try to grow in integrity, there's probably inside of all of us this, especially those of us that are Christians, where we want to have more integrity, but we know that it's going to cost us something. It's going to hurt. If you reflect on a lot more years of life than I have, have you ever experienced the consequences because you did the right thing? Can you think of a time when that happened?
Oh, yes. You know, you don't always need to look for biblical examples. As I think about John the Baptist, who found himself sitting up in prison because he did the right thing by proclaiming to Herod that him and Herodias should not be in a relationship. I had that same experience of really walking along with a friend who wanted to dabble in a relationship of adultery. And we are friends. I'm talking about dear in heart. And I knew it. You know, I knew he was going to make that decision. And because we were partners, we were also partners in ministry together, that I had to let him know that not only did I not approve of that, but man, our integrity, our character was at stake. And not only that, the impact upon others in terms of relationship and those who looked up to him was at stake. And he decided that he was going to move forward in this illicit, adulterous relationship, in which I told him I was going to give him an opportunity to inform his wife, and if not, I was going to do right by her by informing her. And he chose not to and decided that he was going to leave it up to me, in which I did, and not only informed her, but our supervisor, our pastor, who was our lead pastor, and informed him. And that just caused my brother not only some headaches and heartaches in his own life because of some decisions he made, but because of the decision I made. But I was willing to walk with him in the process, and he decided that he would ridicule my name among others that we knew. And that really, I mean, that was a character assassination that he put upon me that took quite some time to see repaired. Since then, we've reconciled, but he really slashed, if you will, my character in the eyes of others.
Yeah, there's no question that making decisions, I mean, I've experienced a small percentage, I'm sure, of what you have, but just the financial costs, the relational costs, the cost of doing the right thing, but it's never wrong to do the right thing. You know, that proverb, it says, whoever walks in integrity walks securely. Whoever takes crooked paths will be found out. Maybe let me ask to dip back into the archives, Marvin, and tell me about a time where you took a crooked path.
Yes.
And you were found out. Tell me about a time when you lacked integrity, and what'd you learn from that?
Man, there was a time when I was especially young in my ministry. I wanted to always look upright in front of people.
Yeah.
And so I remember clearly that I was late for a meeting that I wasn't really prepared for. And when I got there, I came up with an excuse that I went to talk to a specific individual, and I used a name, and I was telling him I was late because I went to visit this individual who was incarcerated. had no idea that some of the guys in the room would also know that individual. And so they later on asked that individual, when they were talking and they went to visit, they said, hey, it was good to see that, you know, Marvin came to visit. I heard Marvin came to visit you. And which they returned, and their reply was, oh, he didn't come to visit us. You know, I never seen him. And later on, he held that information to our next meeting time, in which he did a devotional on the issue of integrity. Yeah. You know? And he shared an illustration without using my name, but like David, I knew Nathan was speaking to me. And so later on, I had to, you know, confess that.
Yeah.
And I shared with the guys, you know what? That illustration was for me. That devotional was for me, rather, because, you know, in order for me to keep up my appearance before you guys, I was willing to surrender my integrity and lie about something that never happened in order to be in your good graces. Yeah. And I said, I apologize because I should have never given you that kind of power.
Yeah. Marvin, if somebody's listening right now and they're, maybe your example or my last question has awoken this, you know, mistake that they've made, this lack of integrity that they've had, it can be so hard to go back and to make amends and to admit a mistake. Just encourage us or challenge us for a minute. You know, what do you do whenever you need to admit a mistake? What goes through your mind? That
is when you recognize you live in a fallen, fallible, finite world in which oftentimes believers and individuals alone just simply say, look, I'm not perfect. Well, sometimes we think we're not perfect in mind and in the things that we say, but then we do things that will protect perfection in us that doesn't exist. Yeah. And so I would like to encourage individuals to understand that, listen, if you desire to live a transparent life, and that's what I've decided that I would do, that's what protects me in integrity, is that I decide I'm going to live a transparent life where no skeletons in my closet unless somebody put them in there. I decided I would live a transparent life because it sets me free from having to try to be impressive to someone. That's where we find ourselves putting our integrity in the chopping blocks. Either we want to impress somebody, we want to look like somebody else, we want to create a facade that allows people to see us a certain way. You know, when it comes to the issue of transparency, we recognize that not only do I not have it all together, but everybody else that I live among don't have it all together. That's just reality. You know, that reality says that we all are in need of Jesus. And as we talked about, Philippians 1:6 says that we can be confident that Jesus, who begun a good work in us, he will be the one to complete it, not us. He will complete it. And so until he completes it upon that day before I rise, then I recognize that I'm fallen, finite, and fallible. And so I have not reached or have attained such perfection. And so as an imperfect person, then I recognize that I will do imperfect things. So if you have a congregation, you got people out there who said, man, I blew it. Here's the beauty of blowing it, is that you get the opportunity to make it right again. That's where 1 John 1:9 is all about, is the cleansing of unrighteousness so that we can be placed back in a righteous state. And that's why I love a forgiving God. And so oftentimes, if you're going to be truly a man and woman that wants to be a follower after Jesus' own heart, it requires you to be able to say, I'm sorry. It requires you to be able to say, you know what? I was wrong. It requires you to be able to say, go to another person and say, look, if I've offended you, I want you to forgive me. But it also requires you to be able to say, you know what? I lied. I was wrong. I didn't do what I said I would do. I didn't meet your expectation. can you forgive me? That's what's required of us. And yeah, that's what integrity does. It says, I go back to you and let you know, forgive me, I've wronged you.
Yeah. It's good. It's good, man. Marvin, you have 5 kids.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of our church, we've got a lot of people in their 20s and 30s, a lot of people having 2-3 kids right now. Lots of...
Get higher, y'all. Go higher.
Lots of shoe tie and lots of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, lots of little ones. And there's, you know, a desire in my heart and in a lot of our hearts to raise our kids to be people of integrity. But, you know, I can remember growing up and my dad wanting to instill this in me. And, you know, I just didn't get it until a certain point where I began to understand the value of integrity. I guess just speak to this as a dad and in raising children to walk in integrity. What does that look like for you?
Amen. I love Jesus in terms of his teaching style. He was parabolic. He would take the concepts of the culture to bring forth the reality of divine truth. And so I've taken that as well when it comes to my kids and when we were raising our children, even into their adulthood now. And that is taking teachable moments. Put it this way to your parents, even now. Our kids who are participating in sports, or they participating in drama, or they participating in other social clubs, there are always meetings to go to, or there are practices to attend. And every time, I would love to have been able to go to my coach and say, hey, coach, I read the playbook. Don't worry about me. I'll see you during game time. You know, the coach would say, no. If you want to play during game time, you better be here for practice, because we're going to be running drills. And that's where in the Christian life, we do not do well. We don't run enough drills to help our children get it, to make connections between faith and life. And so I remember what we did in one of our times together as a family. Angie and I wanted to teach our kids how to tell the truth. You know, telling the truth is simply admitting to what you've seen or what you've heard. And so we decided that we were going to just drop money around the house. You know, which one of our kids were going to say they found this money and return it to us to ask us if we are the ones that left it. And we knew that if they did, then they got the lessons on telling the truth that we was teaching. If they didn't, then they didn't get it. We recognized that even about sharing. We decided at one table we'd give everybody cups and everybody plates, but only some would get drinks with a can and others would get chips, you know, with the bags. And so one of the kids said, I didn't get nothing to drink. He said, yeah, we know. And the one would say, well, I ain't getting nothing, no bags of chips. And we say, yeah, we know. Because if they don't take their can and pour it in their brother or sister's cup, and then their brother or sister open that bag and don't share it and pour some onto their brother or sister's plate, then guess what? We talked about sharing for 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. They still didn't get it. Why are we going to go on to the next lesson? Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes we live life like Sunday school lessons. We just go from one lesson to the next lesson to the next lesson. And we never run drills to see if our children get it. There are other hard moments where my kids will ask me, they learn in Sunday school about the parable of the servant. And they recognize that even in the midst of the Samaritan who was beaten and abused, and then a Samaritan comes in and helps him, you know, and takes him to a hotel and puts him up and pays for his stay and makes sure he was cared for. Because they were listening to that in school, in Sunday school, one day we were driving, and we got caught at a 4-way stoplight, and there was a guy standing there with a sign that says, help me, I'm hungry and homeless. Hmm. And my kids associated that with the parable of the Good Samaritan that they just listened to in Sunday school. And so they started asking me questions. Well, Dad, if he's hungry, why is nobody feeding him? If he's homeless, why isn't somebody making sure he has a place to stay? And they were giving me these questions. And I needed to get them to school, and I wanted to get to a meeting after I dropped them off. But we were late going to school, and I never made my meeting because me and my sons were taking this young man who was on the street to a neighborhood McDonald's to make sure that we were feeding him and then giving him a ride to the Salvation Army's Harbor Light Center so he would have a place to stay. My kids helped me to see that if the Word of God is going to be more than just nursery rhymes to them, but it's an expectation that we do what it says, then integrity says, if you're going to be a preacher, Daddy, and your preaching is a life example of what is happening out there in the neighborhood, I want to see the two come together. And so we did. I needed to make it come together for them. And so we went and we paused our day to make this moment a mark in their life.
It's good, man. Well, hey, let me fire a few questions here at the end. Call them the final four. You don't know what they are. Good luck.
All right.
30 years married. 30 years married. I'm 7 years married, Marvin. Give me and everybody else who's under 10 years married, give us a tip on what decade number two and number three of marriage, how can we make it the best it can be?
Well, number one is recognizing that happiness in marriage is a lie. That's not the byproduct. Happiness is not the purpose of marriage. It's a byproduct of marriage.
Yeah.
Marriage is really your billboard of Christ's relationship with the church.
Hey, what's one book that you would recommend every young person ought to read other than the Bible?
Yeah. So there's one that I like that's called Life Focus. Life Focus by Mark Devery. What it does is it takes an illustration from physics talking about vectoring, and that there are certain times in our life and certain seasons in our life that we find ourselves vectoring into different directions. But there's always a particular point that allows us to understand this one concept. God can interrupt your regularly scheduled program anytime he wants without your permission to bring you something different.
That's good. Life focus.
Life focus.
Life focus. Okay. What's one thing every young person ought to do every single day?
Number one, you get up in the morning and you say to your Lord, not only thank you for allowing me to be alive, but how do you want to use me today? If every young person would say, how do you want to use me today? It takes the day off of you being self-centered into a other-centered focus.
Last one, definitely the least theological, hot topic up here. The Last Dance came out. You know, we've all, you know, we're in Ohio up here, Marvin. We're in Ohio, so the whole LeBron Jordan thing, it's contentious. You probably, I'm thinking you watched the NBA in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, yes.
LeBron and Jordan.
We just think basketball is different today. And so I would surrender and submit towards the Jordan era of things, you know, as being one of the best basketball players. But here's the difference. While I might think that Jordan was one of the best players ever on the basketball court, what you do off the court is really what defines your legacy.
Mm.
And by far, LeBron has a greater legacy than Jordan does. LeBron is more generous than Jordan has ever been.
Mm.
LeBron, even in what he's seeking to do and speak out upon, has been a mouthpiece where Jordan refused to be a mouthpiece at. And so I would say Jordan was one of the best, if not the best, on the court. of course, Six Rings helps you talk about the achievements. You can't deny the achievements. But off the court, LeBron James have definitely displayed that he is a better man off the court.
I love it. Marvin, thank you so much. God bless you, man. Keep doing what you're doing. I hope we get to run into one another again soon.
Likewise, continue to be men and women of integrity, and it's never too young, and you're never too old.
Thanks for listening. We hope this interview was encouraging and helpful as you chase wisdom and pursue a life well lived. To find out more about our church, connect with others, or to give online, visit 3creekschurch.com.